to the Pick Place Podcast, a show where we talk about electronics manufacturing and everything related to getting a circuit board into the world. This is Chris Denny with Worthington.
And this is Melissa Hoag with Circuit Hub.
Welcome back, Melissa.
Welcome back, Chris. It's been a few weeks.
Oh, it's good to be back. Sorry for not being back for so many weeks. Okay. You know, it's a good thing we don't get paid for this podcast. Otherwise, we would really be...
We'd be in trouble.
We'd be in big trouble. That's a labor of love, Melissa. That's why we do it.
Well, if anyone out there missed us, we're super excited for today's show.
Yes. Yeah. And perhaps that's part of the reason we haven't been recording, because we've been trying to prepare for today's show. It's something we've been working on for a little while now. And, you know, well, first of all, briefly, I think I mentioned on last month's episode. that I'd be having a, we'll be having a Pick Place podcast meetup at Apex. And so that is going to relate right into today's show. We have a very special guest. We have the president of IPC, Dr. John W. Mitchell, on our show, and we want to welcome him. Welcome, John, to the show.
Welcome, John.
Thank you, guys. Great to be here.
Happy to have you. Not going to lie, a little bit intimidated. I've been working for and related to IPC since I was 16 years old. So it's like...
So 3 years then.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Yeah. Thank you so much, sir. Thank you so much. So John, for people who are not familiar with IPC, could you give a brief introduction as to what IPC is? I've mentioned it a bunch on the show, but not everybody listens to every episode. At least I hope they don't. I mean, you really have to suffer if you want to listen to every episode, but otherwise, please.
I like your emphasis on brief introduction to IPC. Yeah. It's like, don't go all day, buddy. So IPC is a trade association for the electronics industry. We work with companies that design, build, manufacture, deliver electronics, supply, basically the entire value chain up and down across the globe. There's about 3,200 different companies that are part of that. And we focus on primarily four big areas: standards, education, advocacy, and solutions. So standards, IPC doesn't create those standards. It's the industry that creates it. We kind of shepherd the process. Same with our education products. We go out to industry and say, so if we're going to try to raise the skill level of a certain position, what do we need to be teaching them? And they tell us, and then we put that through, you know, the right learning avenues. And we have instructional designers that, you know, use all the latest learning science to make sure that you can retain the information that you hear. It's not just death by PowerPoint. It's multimodal, all this good stuff. Advocacy, I get the chance to go to DC, Brussels, Beijing, Tokyo, and work with government officials.
Sounds like a rough life, John.
Well, it's all airports and hotels, man. It sounds glamorous till you do it for a while.
You're right.
And then solutions, when we're talking to all of these, you know, members, thousands of people all over the world, when we start hearing common threads of problems, and we'll touch on some of the work that we're doing probably, we try to focus and work with industry to solve those problems. That's really what we're about.
Cool. Yeah. I can vouch for the training. In preparation for this, I took one of the IPC Edge training courses.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's interactive. There's like drag and drop like functions to make sure you really understand what you're doing, what you've learned. And then there's, you know, Q&A, there's true and false. There's, you know, there's visual audio. They're really well done. Everything IPC does is top notch. It's very professional, but I guess, you know, surprised at just how good it was. I was kind of expecting death by PowerPoint, but it was very good.
Yeah. Death by PowerPoint is not how to learn anything. Yeah. And our team there is really, they're really great. They're passionate. They want to make sure that the goal is to learn, not to just crank out programs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You want it to be effective. Exactly. Well, so today you are the president of IPC.
Say that like tomorrow I won't be, but okay.
But yesterday you were.
Today you are.
Yeah. How did you end up in that position? Where did you come from? What were you doing before this?
Yeah. So I was an electrical engineer early on, worked for General Electric, Alpine Electronics, doing automotive electronics and GPS technology, have a patent in navigation systems.
Oh, cool.
Then moved to Bose and did infotainment systems for vehicles that some of you may have driven, some of you may have not.
How long were you at Bose? What time frame were you at Bose?
6 years. I was there from 2003 to 2008. Yeah.
There's a chance we may have interacted with each other. Well, maybe not. If you weren't buying SMT equipment, then probably not. But I wasn't.
No.
Yeah, we were selling SMT equipment there before I was with Worthington. Yeah. Cool. I'll tell you a fun story. We sold some SMT equipment to Bose in Massachusetts here, and it was delivered to a factory, I believe, in Mexico. Okay. All right. And when it was delivered, the equipment, you know, got in a truck and it came into the United States, and then it was shipped down to Mexico and on a truck. And there was a large storm. And when the truck got to the factory, they said, look, it's crazy. It's late. Let's just leave the trailer here for now. We'll unload it, you know, on Monday or whenever it was. And they had trouble opening the truck that Monday, and they figured out, like, they need to get like a pry bar to get this door open. And as they did, metric tons of water came pouring out.
The top was open, but it was like sealed or something.
It was like holes or rust or something like that. And the whole trailer filled up with all. So we actually got two sales out of that transaction because the insurance company paid for the second one. And we got full commission on both.
Wow.
Fun fact about, selling equipment to Bose. That was good times.
I worked for a nonprofit, Golden Key International Honor Society, giving away millions of dollars in scholarships to college students all over the world. And then I came to IPC.
Brilliant. Now, so you're in electronics, then you're in education, nonprofit, and then you go to IPC. How did that transition happen? Were you looking for something different or like?
No,
obviously education is clearly your passion. It's what you have.
Education is one of my passions. The nice thing is, so IPC is like the juxtaposition of everything I've ever done in my career. It's fantastic. Mm. So it's got the electrical engineering piece of it, right? Because I still geek out over all that stuff. I just love that stuff. Yeah. And then, you know, the international aspect of it and the business aspect from my MBA, you know, obviously we're running a business, we're working with business people, we're trying to help their businesses. So that's in there. International, as I mentioned, pretty much every job I've ever worked at has been somehow globally tied. So it's nice that IPC is a global organization. Then I had the nonprofit experience at the nonprofit. IPC is a nonprofit, so I got to bring in that. And then, of course, the education aspect with my doctorate. So it's literally all five major aspects of my career path all at once, which is just great. I mean, it's fantastic. I couldn't ask for a better opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, if you didn't end up in this position, you were certainly on the trajectory to end up in this position for sure.
I didn't even know this position existed 5 years before I got into it, you know?
Exactly. Well, it's funny. IPC is one of those things that in my recollection when, you know, I got A610 training when I was pretty young, and I remember, you know, going over everything and being like, oh, okay, I recognize this is some kind of an important thing, but I really struggled to understand what it was for a long time until I got involved in it, right? Until I actually got my feet wet and it's like, oh, now I get what IPC.
Now
they're
I
not
it.
Just the people well, that make the
today,
books.
Even today, you have people coming out of universities with electrical engineering degrees that really don't know what it means to build something.
Right.
And that's, you know, we have this, one of our training programs, I don't know if it's the one that you took, but it's called EAE. It's Electronics Assembly for Engineers. It just teaches them how this stuff works.
Right.
And, you know, it's about 30, 40 hours, which is a great tutorial. It really teaches them about the industry. We originally came up with a program that was, it was designed really to help operators do their jobs. And then we had so many people saying, hey, we'd like our engineers to take this course. We're like, well, let us design one that's for the engineers, talk in a kind of a slightly different language that's more geared toward them. And that really helps.
What is the specific name of that?
We call it EAE, Electronics Assembly for Engineers.
Beautiful, because that's literally what this show is. So it's like the target audience for that program is our listeners, you know, because the whole point of this show originally was to help engineers and designers, like, what is stencil printing? And how does your design impact the stencil printing process? And what is a pick and place machine? What does it mean to be moisture sensitive device? And you know, like all these kinds of things. So that sounds awesome. That I would definitely recommend if you're an engineer listening.
Yeah, it's on the Edge platform. So I think it's edge.ipc.org, or you just go to ipc.org and search education. You'll find it.
Yeah. But, and a lot of times, if you're working for a larger business, your company probably already is a member of IPC, and there's discounts for members and stuff like that as well. Yeah.
Yep, that's right.
We get, And there's a lot of free content. Like the course I took this morning.
If you remember,
was
totally
free. So
yeah. Which course did you take? Do you remember?
The ESD training.
Okay, the ESD one. Yeah, so there's a free ESD training. There's a free safety course. And now we just launched a free FOD or FOD.
Yeah, which is the hot topic.
Foreign object and debris.
Yeah. But the ESD is great because we developed our own kind of internal ESD training program for new hires. But I've always had this feeling like, you know, did it really stick? And now I'm excited to be like, here, go through this program. Let's discuss it afterward. Make sure it's stuck. You know, I'm excited to have.
Well, that's the thing that cracks me up. We try to keep the membership dues fairly low. You know, it's, you know, and especially as you look at other associations, they're ridiculously low. But if you think about, you know, you might spend anywhere from $10 to $40 per year just doing ESD training for each employee. And just as a member, you know, if say you have 100 employees, that's a huge savings.
Huge.
You know, it's
40 huge.
Grand a year. That you could be saving, and it's just, and it's, you actually can get a certificate that says, you know, it's serialized and everything that you can use for your credentials and all that stuff. So yeah, we just thought it was a good thing to do for the industry.
Yep. I am now a credentialed ESD trained employee of Worthington Assembly. Also, one thing I had to bring up, I love the fact that you are not only a geek with a double E, because you can't spell geek without double E. This is a brilliant point. But you're also like a man of my own heart. You love fantasy and sci-fi novels. I was so excited to hear that. it's through and through, John. It's not just surface level. It's not just what you make your living on. You are through and through.
You know, it's funny. I'm giving a short speech tomorrow, and they said, we should put a story arc on this. So I'm working Dune throughout the entire presentation.
Brilliant. Brilliant. That's fantastic.
They're like, wow, that ties to all of this workforce stuff. I'm like, yeah, it actually does.
Yeah. That is awesome. So I appreciate you helping us to get to know you a little bit better and what IPC and everything is. But I wanted to discuss your book for listeners who aren't familiar. If you don't mind, can you give us a title and the gist?
Sure. It's called Fire Your Hiring Habits.
Love it.
Came out June of last year. Amazon bestseller. Woohoo! You know, the other key thing that I like to remind everybody is the proceeds from this book actually go to the IPC Foundation, which helps build the pipeline, helps engender the workforce for the industry.
Right?
I don't get any money for this at all. It's really about giving back to the industry.
That's awesome. If you had mentioned that in your book, it totally went in one ear and out the other. Hopefully not all of it did.
I didn't mention it in the book. It is in one of the pages of the book, and it's on the webpage. We highlight it, you know, et cetera. But yes, all proceeds go to the foundation.
Excellent. And I love, okay, so you dropped a number of references in your book, and I'm listening to this and I'm going, okay, obviously this guy, he knows his stuff. You had mentioned Steve Jobs in there, which, I mean, obviously we're in the electronics world. Steve Jobs, a very important figure in the electronics world. And I had to ask, with your role at Bose and Alpine and all these other things, did you ever have a chance to interact with the executives at Apple or Steve himself?
Not directly themselves, although with Tesla, when they were first getting started, they came and visited us, which was kind of fun.
Very cool. They are a very innovative company, man. They're doing some cool stuff. I am I'm a proud owner of one myself. I'm a big fan of their vehicles. Yeah, awesome. You mentioned Star Wars in there. You mentioned Marvel in there. You mentioned Looney Tunes. I'm like, get out of here. He's got, because your whole analogy of Acme and what was it, Better Co. or something like that. What was the other one?
Newco,
thank you.
Yeah. It's Acapel led by the president, Wile E. Coyote, and
yes,
then Newco led by Roadrunner.
It was so much fun to listen to. It was awesome.
Business books can be dull. And so
dull.
I'm trying to keep people engaged because these are some important messages we wanted to say. So there's the academic side of my brain that's going, oh, you're not taking this very seriously. And then the other part of me is like, hey, if people aren't going to listen or read it,
that's right.
What's the point?
That's right. And by throwing humor and fun things in there, it sticks better. You know,
yeah, exactly.
Like I may not have remembered the name of the company was Newco, but I got the point. Like I understood, like, you know, what you were.
Yeah, for those of you who haven't read the book, for the last four or six chapters, at the end of the chapter, to illustrate what you've learned, I contrast Acme with Newco. And it's not, you know, it's kind of funny because I'm sure you may remember, Chris, some of the Acme stuff sounds not bad.
Right. Yes.
You're sitting going, wait a second, this is the Coyote stuff.
Yes.
Where do I get hit by the anvil? Because that's what they make in their, you know, in the thing, you know, they're anvil producers. But anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I also want to bring out one other thing. It just is like a couple of points that really stuck with me and really, in my opinion, are like a critical message to get through to people in responsible positions for hiring and training and things like that. I love how you emphasize the importance of allowing people to be themselves, whether it's their sexual orientation, their religion, their age, and
educational
how much we
background,
can, yeah,
geography, everything.
It was so, to me, it hit home so hard because we have a pretty diverse work group. I mean, it closely reflects the community that our factory is in, right? Like, sure. you're not going to have a high population of one group of people that live in the Middle East if you're in Western Massachusetts. It's just not what we experience here. But you're especially the way that you talked about embracing old and young alike and how much you can gain from people. You mentioned, oh, don't hire the 60-year-old because you're going to invest in all them and then they're going to retire at 65. And it's like, yeah, but the amount of value they're going to bring to you in just a short period of time, even if that's just for a year, is tremendous.
And how many of your employees last more than 5 years anyway?
And I love that.
Hopefully all of them, but not necessarily.
Yeah, exactly. For sure. And I especially appreciated it. For me, this hit especially hard because you talked about how it's not a great thing. Okay. How do I put this? Many people will often say, I hear this phrase all the time. You know, young people these days, they just don't want to work. They just want to play on their iPhone all day. And it really drives me crazy when I hear that because I was young once, right? And I loved to, play on PlayStation or whatever we had back then, right? Of course I did.
Yeah.
But I also loved to work hard. And it really bothered the thought that I wasn't willing to work hard and that I wasn't willing to put the time in. Yes, I'm young. Yes, I'm inexperienced. And yes, I need training and I need guidance and things like that. But I was a sponge and I was ready for it. And I like to think that when I was young, I was a large contributor because I was so hungry to contribute. And so just because people are young doesn't mean that they can't provide tremendous value to a company. And love the whole point.
Yeah, you should walk into every experience and figure out what you can learn from each person that you're interacting with. I mean, literally you can learn something. And I was taught this when I was at Alpine. It was kind of funny. I was I was talking to a coworker of mine, a colleague, and I said, I think I'm prejudiced. He goes, what do you mean? I said, I'm prejudiced against stupid people. And he said, let's go for a walk.
Yeah.
And he sat there and he walked me through, the Gardner intelligence thing. He goes, look, there's a kid over here that will survive in Compton that you wouldn't last a day.
That's right.
He has all kinds of knowledge, and yet you may not judge that. And it's just changed my whole view of my life. And now this is, decades ago, but it just really did me a favor to say, there's something to be gained from everybody. I mean, I share in the book, I think, maybe I don't remember, but I was in a meeting with a colleague at IPC and she kept making notes on her phone, playing with her phone while we were talking. And I'm like, what the heck? I'm having a meeting with you. Why are you texting? Why are you playing on your phone? And she was doing, she was actually trying to write the things down that we were discussing. It was how she took notes. And I, again, had to do a mental shift saying, this is not playing. This is actually work. This is actually better than what you're doing, Mitchell, than writing something in a paper binder and then setting it aside.
Hey,
and
whatever
never
works
it
for you.
Two
paper's
years
fine
later.
Too. Whatever work. Whatever. If it whatever works and it's effective, use paper. Like, I have no objection. To that.
I still use paper. But
when I go and I meet with suppliers and I meet with customers, I am that guy. I take notes on my phone. And before I do this, I go, just so you know, I'm not ignoring you. I am on my phone taking notes. This is what I use to take notes.
I value what you're saying, and this is the way that I capture it.
Yeah. And because a lot of times, just like you, it'll immediately be like, oh, should I wait? Like, are you busy? Are you tired? It's like, no, this is, so I preempt that and I say, I'm taking notes. That way
they know.
They know what I'm doing. Yeah. Anyway, I can't recommend it for listeners highly enough, especially if you're in a position of hiring or training. That book
I mean, what's the most
brilliant.
Important thing? One of our board members mentioned to me, he goes, John, anybody can buy the materials. Anybody can buy the equipment. The differentiator is your people.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And so finding and keeping the best people is what it's all about to be successful and making sure that they have the capabilities they need.
Exactly. It's exactly right. I say it all the time. Whenever we give tours, we walk through, I go, look, anybody can buy this Fuji pick and place machine, right? Anybody can buy this Vitronics oven. Anybody can put together a factory and put all the bits together, but not everybody can actually deliver it the way you need it delivered. And it takes the people inside the factory to make that happen. We've bragged about it, I think, a few times on the show before. We have a really thorough review process where your coworkers do your review as well. And I get reviewed. The president of our company gets
reviewed. It's a 360 review.
It's a 360, exactly. And in that process, we highlight the importance of two things that I really care a lot about. Number one, humility. How does this person approach their work? Do they approach their work with humility and a willingness to learn and to grow? Secondly, honesty. And not honesty in the sense of do they tell the truth, but are they willing to tell you, hey, you messed up here. you got to correct these things. And that there's so much more to our 360 process than those two things. But those two things, they do a nice job of kind of closing the loop and helping to develop a really strong team. So I wish you had written your book in June of 2017 instead of June of 2023, because we would have saved ourselves a lot of time. But I think the points you make in your book and some of the stuff we do in our 360 has really helped to develop the young people we have hired, because we hire a lot of young people right out of high school, or maybe just college just wasn't a good fit for them for whatever reason. You know, there's a number of reasons why somebody won't go to college, but they are providing tremendous value to Worthington Assembly, to Circuit Hub, to customers that we're delivering products to. They're wonderful to work with. They work hard. They really care about doing a good job. And I'm so anti-ageism. It's such a pet peeve. It's such a pet peeve.
There you go.
So
you're right. There's some people that just aren't cut out for college. They just don't like the environment, et cetera. And they can still be fantastic contributors. And this was a hard lesson for me to learn personally. Mm. So my oldest son, brilliant, just didn't like college. And so wanted to work with his hands. And so I was like, oh, there is life without college, and there's actually a really productive life, and actually not a bad life at all. Because
not bad at all.
You know, we all have these phones, right? And we're tethered. You're on 24/7, and there's an option to do more of a, you know, he can go to work at 8 and be home at 5 and doesn't have to worry about the phone ringing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Exactly. I was doing like a video call with a friend of mine last night, and sure enough, my phone starts ringing, FaceTime, and employees stuck on the line, and I'm trying to help them through it. When I just want to hang out with my friend. Yep. We all get it. So I will stop on the book. I just recommend everybody listen to it. It's fantastic.
So one last thing on the book. If you are coming to Apex, we'll have copies there that I'm happy to sign for you as well, if you want to pick them up and support the industry.
Awesome. Well, if you don't have time to read the book, which you should make time. It's not a huge book. You also have a podcast related to the book. I think it's kind of a complement to the book. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So it's by the same name, Fire Your Hiring Habits. We reach out to other professionals across the world and talk about really a lot of HR issues. You know, how do we work with people, bring in people, and highlight a lot of other people's work? We don't talk a ton about my book necessarily.
I know
there's a couple little points that I sneak in there occasionally, but rarely. It's more about what other people are doing to further this kind of idea of, you know, finding and keeping the best people.
Great. Yeah. Highly recommend. If you're a fan of this show, I think you'll be a fan of John's show as well.
Wherever podcasts can be downloaded.
Especially if you're in a position of management or hiring, or even if you're not, even if, you know, you just want to know how a good company should function, and maybe you're stuck in a company that doesn't function well, you know, give us a call. We're a company that functions well. So.
Exactly. Yeah.
Maybe that's not humble enough, but I don't know. I'm a fan of what we've done so far. There's always room for improvement. But I'm very
always room for improvement. Even the best companies. You know, I'm reading a book right now called Creativity Inc., you know, about the Pixar.
I've read it. Yes. Story. It's fantastic.
They just did a revised version, so I'm just about done with it here. But they talk about, you know, how the struggles to keep a company focused and, you know, not get complacent, not, you know, and just manage a lot of these challenges. There's a lot of work in trying to keep an organization thriving.
Yeah, Creativity Inc., that was about Pixar, right? Wasn't it written by Pixar CEO?
Pixar, by Ed Catmull.
Ed Catmull, yes. Yes. As a matter of fact, our pick and place machines, they have these, they have the ones we used to have, they're made by a company called MyData, and they have these things called magazines that you plug into them. And I like to give each of them a unique name. And I named one of them Catmull after I read his book, because I enjoyed it so much. Yeah. I forgot that was his name though. This shows how well it stuck. So, all right. So let's talk a little bit about the event coming up, Apex. I'll be attending, as mentioned. I'm sure you'll be there, John. Can you tell us a little bit about, first of all, what Apex is? But I'm a little fascinated to know a little bit of the history. If you know some of the history of Apex and how it got to be what it is today. If you don't, that's fine. Listeners can Google it.
We'll give you a little bit of everything. So first, Apex is really three shows in one. Okay. It's IPC Apex Expo. You have the exhibition floor where people are showing their wares and things like that. You have standards committee meetings where you have, you know, tons of people coming from all different kinds of companies working on these standards that help people build electronics better. And then you have the technological or training and development segment, which is really about improving your skills, listening to the latest, greatest information on a wide variety of topics, from advanced packaging to sustainability to, you know, what have you, and including, you know, how to actually, you know, figure out which type of whatever you need to make it work. You know, there's just there's literally hundreds of courses available to you. So it's three shows in one. This year is a little bit unique in a couple of ways. We're actually hosting the 16th Electronic Circuits World Convention as well.
So
every 3 years, this moves around the world, and it's an international PCB symposium that's held there. So when you come to Apex, this year it's in Anaheim. The last several years it's been in San Diego. So if you're automatically just booking your ticket for San Diego, don't do that. You'll have a 2-hour drive to the show. But there's around 9,000 professionals from over 60 countries that come there and just work through all of that. The exhibition floor has over 400 exhibitors. This year also, we're going to have three different keynotes with a little bit of a new twist. So our opening keynote is the former principal concept technical director from Walt Disney Imagineering, Paul Bailey. Nice. He's going to talk about some anecdotes in his opening about the creation of Star Wars, Rise of the Resistance, and other moonshot projects. So looking forward to that'll be Tuesday. Wednesday at lunch, I'm actually speaking, talking about the transformative impact of automation, AI, and technology on the human workforce.
Oh, wow.
And then our closing keynote, something we haven't done for a while, will be our chief economist, Sean Duberbeck, who always does a fascinating job. And he's going to talk about trends revolutionizing the electronics industry from you know, AI's breakthroughs to other emerging shifts, and just talks about the change that's, you know, really going to be bringing about a new era of innovation and growth. So those are the keynotes.
Cool.
If you come early before, the show technically starts on Tuesday. On Monday, there's an EMS Leadership Summit, brings together. So this audience, I think, would want to be thinking about that. All are welcome for that as well.
I'll be there, but I don't know if I can qualify myself as a leader, but that's okay. I can pretend for an hour.
Topics include things like, you know, how qualified market data helps EMS companies make better decisions, the importance of KPIs in business, mergers and acquisitions, managing emerging technology, strategy and building. I'm just going through the list of, there's a ton there. On those educational offers, I'm going to tell you a litany. There's like 100 paper presentations on 9 topics at the technical conference, like design, PCB fab and materials, assembly processes, HDI, micro HDI, substrates, sustainability for electronics, high reliability, and factory of the future. There's 2 special sessions just on next gen packaging and electric vehicle. There's 32 professional development courses, from advanced classes exploring the details and depth of specific topics to informative classes catering to engineers just beginning their careers. The attendees learn about best practices, lessons from challenges that people have experienced in the field, as well as cutting edge technology, and then trends with updated standards. What else we got?
So I think if one person attends, they should be able to join every one of those sessions, right?
No problem. Oh yeah, exactly. So don't think you're going to catch it all as a single individual. But anyway,
the way I typically approach it, because it can be overwhelming. PC does you guys do a great job with the agenda planner. And you can see like when everything is scheduled for. And I just look for things that are like, oh, I'm having a problem with this right now. And I put that on my agenda because I really want to see if I can.
And it just fills up your calendar too. Yeah. It'll put it right there in the app. And so it's helpful. But you asked about the history.
Yeah.
First off, this show would not be possible without dedicated volunteers and industry leaders. IPC doesn't do this show. Volunteers and industry leaders really make this show possible. So I have to kind of shout out to that before I start on the history. So are you ready for the convoluted history of IPC?
Yeah, I am. Are you kidding me?
All right. It's not really convoluted. But so in 1994, IPC opened their Printed Circuits Expo in Boston. And about 1,700 people attended. There were like 275 booths or so. And then in the year 2000, the SMEMA count. I got to remember what SMEMA stands for.
Melissa knows exactly what it stands for because I always forget and she always corrects me.
Well, I always Google it's
the Surface Mount
Electronics Manufacturing Association.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Anyway, they started in 2000 is really when the conference started and became APEX at the Long Beach Convention Center. There were about a little over 300 exhibitors and had about 140,000 square feet with 5,700 attendees.
That was around 2000, and you said?
It was the year 2000. And General Norman Schwarzkopf, retired, delivered the keynote.
No, sir.
Yeah.
That's wild.
How about that?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And there was still the IPC Printed Circuits Expo that happened that year. And then gradually it came together. It moved to the San Diego Convention Center because it outgrew the Long Beach Convention Center in 2000. Mm-hmm. In 2004, they merged. So you ended up, that's where Apex became Apex Expo because it was the IPC Printed Circuits Expo. That's who you combined the two labels there. And it also included the Designer Summit. And that was in Anaheim, where we're going back this year. Mm-hmm. And then 2012, 13, and 18, IPC Apex Expo was named one of the 25 fastest growing shows for attendance by Trade Show News. 2017, it was in the 50 fastest. In 2021, we did it virtually. There was this something going on in the world. I don't know what that was. Something, some video. No, COVID. That's what it was called.
Oh, okay. Glad you remember.
So we did it virtually. And we're looking forward to next year being our 25th anniversary.
Oh, wow.
So
wow.
There's a short little history of Apex Expo.
You missed it. I was definitely in Vegas for a little while because I went a few years when it was in Vegas.
Yeah. So we used to alternate between San Diego and Vegas. It was a year or two here, a year or two there. And we just kind of bounced back and forth. And we used to hold it at Mandalay Bay in Vegas.
Yep.
I think it was. And Mandalay Bay expanded their, here's a little back dirt story, right?
Sure,
They expanded their convention floor. And unless you were willing to book 1 million square feet, they weren't interested anymore.
Wow.
And we're like, yeah, we're not there right now. We'll call you in a few years. But yeah, so it was just too big of a space. So we'd been in San Diego now for the last, I think, 6 years in a row. And now we're shifting to Anaheim to try that out for a few years in a row as well.
Yeah, very good. I'm looking forward to it. I was surprised to see that the convention center is directly across the street from Disneyland, like directly across the street.
Yes. So we anticipate people with Mickey Mouse ears walking around, you know, and we'll see. You know, my very first year at Apex Expo was 2012, and I was actually interviewing for this position while I was there.
Cool.
And it was the year William Shatner was the keynote.
Okay. Yep.
And it was kind of funny because they actually had like Trekkie dancers
that
they had brought in. And I was like, what is going on here?
It is a different show. That's for sure. I remember in Vegas, they had like clowns and like stunt performers and stuff came out at the end of the expo one day. And I'm like, boy, this is... Because it's such like a, I don't know, electronics manufacturing can be pretty dry. And then to like have like all this kind of stuff go on, you're like, oh, wow. No, we actually are human. We're not just a bunch of.
Yeah. I mean, like one day on the show floor, one night on the show floor is like the ice cream social. And so we just roll out ice cream carts and people get free ice cream, you know? So it's encouraging the other parts of the show to come down to the expo and say, hey, if you want your ice cream, you got to come down here and check out this stuff, which is also our exhibitors enjoy that.
All right. As long as you got some chocolate peanut butter, I'll be there. I'll be there.
I don't know. I'll have to check on that.
So aside from CTOs of electronics manufacturing businesses, what kind of people do you typically see attend? Who should attend? You know, like if who's going to, you know, what are they going to get out of it?
So if you're in the market or trying to consider outfitting your factory to build electronics, this is the place to go.
Yeah.
To understand what the latest equipment, all the top producers of equipment are there. If you're looking for a PCB supplier as well, they'll be there. And so if you're running a factory, you want to be there to go to the expo and make sure you set up appointments with the clients you're looking to see as well, because they'll be filling up their calendars because they're excited about that. And then if you're interested, if you're an engineer or a technician or even an operator, and you're trying to improve your skills and your knowledge, that's what the professional development conference is all about. Or if you're an expert and you have, so really it's a show for just about everyone. And we're trying to bring the community globally to a show where you can interact and get to know people, you know, and really that networking is what, when I first came here, I was like, why do people do IPC? Why do people do the show? It's about getting to know people. And right. There's some fantastic stories. I mean, I heard this one, you know, just specific to the EMS summit that happens on Monday. You know, two competing folks got to know each other at the EMS summit. One had a client or a customer that had a problem halfway across the country. And they were unable to some reason to go out and help that client. And literally their competitor, who they had met, who lived nearby there, went and helped out that customer for them.
It's incredible.
I was just like, what industry does this? This is fantastic.
It is. Obviously, we're competitive, but like when we get together, you know, we try to help each other. It's like, you know, right. Hey, it's, how do you handle these weird USB ports?
You can I've had people sit there and say that they've saved $2 million because of a side conversation because somebody had already had that problem. And they're like, oh, did you look at this? And they're like, oh, no, we didn't. And oh, my gosh, that fixed it.
Yeah. There's the conference and then there's the side conference. And the side conference is just as valuable sometimes when you get a chance to just get different minds together and blend and learn from each other for sure. Well, great. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm hoping that we'll get a chance to meet a bunch of listeners. We've heard some from some already that want to get together and we look forward to that. It is officially on the IPC Agenda Planner, the Pick Place Podcast Meetup. So by all means, thank you for putting us on there. We appreciate it. I'm hoping we can do some kind of a cool like Q&A session and record it. And if that goes well, we'll publish it. If it doesn't go well, you guys will never hear it. So, all right. So I'm going to throw you a bit of a curveball here. I think I may have primed you for this one. I think I may have mentioned this in my email a few weeks
ago. Okay.
So
27.
Yeah, correct. All right. I don't even have to ask the question. So I understand that IPC does, you know, has committees and it works with industry. And those all sound like these, you know, when I don't have a tangible thing that I can grasp onto, they sound like platitudes. Like, what does that mean? What is it? Like, I don't get it. Like, what do you mean it works with industry? What do you mean set standards? So I'm going to use my own personal agenda to try to use it as a bit of a focusing lens to try to understand how somebody like myself can work with IPC to get together with industry to try to set standards and to try to make changes in the industry. We had an episode, not the most recent one, I think it was the one before that, which was all about packaging SMT components in tubes. Now, John, I don't know if you've ever worked on an SMT pick and place machine before, but if you haven't, I'm trying to think of a good analogy for tubes on a pick and place machine.
Talking about tubes that are placing, you know, that are feeding like tube feeders.
Yeah. So imagine, I'm trying to think of an analogy. Yeah. Tubes, you know, so an SO8, you know, an IC comes in a tube rather than a reel. Right.
Sure.
And let's say you're working at a pizza shop, you know, and you got your faucet that has your water and you got your sack of flour, right. And you got your salt and your yeast and whatever, and you're making pizza dough. And then every now and then you find a worm inside the flour. That's what it feels like to deal with tubes on an SMT pick and place machine. You're like, what? I can't make pizza with this flour. This is horrible. I got to pick out all these worms.
I got to get rid of this whole thing.
Yeah, right. Everybody I've talked to.
So we have worms in the tubes. Now, what's your question? Yeah.
So I'm going to get there. Everybody I've talked to, they've all said, yeah, it's terrible. Like, this is awful. Tubes, packaging components in tubes is terrible. I talked to some high-level people at distributors as well. Distributors don't like tubes either. They hate components in tubes. They're very difficult to manage and ship to customers. People in receiving and kitting and stock rooms and everything up and down, every owner of every SMT shop I've ever talked to, we all hate tubes, right? Okay. So I... you know, a little bit of a tongue in cheek, I decided to start a movement called Stick It Up Your Tube. Very tongue in cheek. But the goal is, and it's a serious goal. Like I like to use humor with Wile E. Coyote running the Acme Factory, right? Yeah. I like to use humor if I'm, you know, whatever it is that I'm working on. But my understanding is, I don't have to call it Stick It Up Your Tube, obviously, but my understanding is somebody like myself who's a nobody, right? Is just somebody working at a 35-person company. I have the ability and the power to get together with IPC, to get together with industry, and start to raise a concern for the industry and say, hey, I think we need to talk about this. I think this is something worth paying attention to. And if I was just, you know, if this was 40 years ago and there was no IPC trade organization, I'd just be stuck with this problem. I wouldn't have resources and tools and places to go where I could start to discuss this and say, hey, can we try to address this problem? Am I the only one frustrated by this? Is anybody else dealing with this? Oh, you are. Oh, you are. Oh, okay. Oh, all of a sudden you get this conversation going. Am I correct or am I wrong that IPC is the kind of organization I should go to about this?
This is the place.
Yeah.
You found it. So yeah. Here's how that works. All right. So we have problems that are challenges or, you know, things that aren't working perfectly all the time. We're all, you know, the industry's changing.
Yeah, innovation's we got worms in the happening.
Flower. And thing doesn't, you know, so we need, the more we can systemize things well, the more efficient everybody runs. And so this is part of the goal of standards. So for instance, let's take your stick it up your tube standard.
Yeah.
And as we are-
The giggle. I should have named it something else because I can't help but laugh every time I hear it. Yeah.
I mean, Dave Bergman is our vice president of standards and technology and has been around IPC for going on 45 years. And nice. So Dave comes up with projects like code projects like Project Voldemort. So I think he would just love Stick It Up Your Tube standard. I mean, it won't be the official name, but it'll be the background name that we're talking about. But so what you do, there is a group called the TAEC, the Technical Advisory Engineering Committee or something like that. Right. I'm going to mess up the acronym, and any individual. So Chris could come into that meeting and say, hey, here's this issue. We have tubes that, you know, have worms and we want that to be fixed. This is a broad issue. And then the committee, along with several different people from industry, the committee's made up of industry people, by the way, not IPC mm-hmm. people. And they review the proposal and that generates what's called a PIN. And I'm going to forget what PIN stands for, but basically it's a proposed standard.
Perfectly right? important. Nonsense. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's actually a serious acronym, but
yeah.
Project. Anyway, so
it generates a PIN.
It generates a PIN. And if that PIN gets approved by the TAC, a standard is started. Now, the joys of bringing up something like this, Chris likely is going to get tapped to be the co-chair of this new committee.
I didn't want to actually have to do any work.
Not necessarily. But, you know, part of the thing is not only is it an issue, are there enough people to make up a committee? Are there enough diverse people? Because you don't want just one segment.
That's right.
Coming up with a standard. And then suddenly, you know, the pick and place machines are going, what the crud are you talking about?
Yeah.
We're not going to, we can't build it. So you want to have a broad and, you know, all stakeholders engaged in the development of the standard. So all views can be recognized and then it moves forward. And there are ways to accelerate it and you can then bring about change.
See, I love it. I love it. I just thought that would be a good lens to kind of focus on what that process is like when somebody wants to make an impact.
There are other ways, you know, where individuals don't really understand and they'll just grab an IPC person and say, hey, or, you know, somebody that looks like they've been around the block a few times and say, hey, there's this problem.
Yeah.
And how do I make a stand? Is there a possibility of getting this considered for a standard? And they'll go, oh yeah, here's the process. Let's go.
Cool. Cool. Very exciting. Now, the one thing that, you know, you can create standards. It's getting people to follow the standards is the hard part, right?
Well, that's, you know, so that's why you want to make sure you've got a well-rounded stakeholder group, right?
Yeah.
So if you've got the people who provide the tubes and then the components and then the machine manufacturers and the people using them, and you get all of those groups, you know, and I'm sure there's probably a couple other stakeholders I'm not even thinking of in there. When they come together and form that standard, they're generally ready to adopt it because they're thinking, how can I do this as I go forward? Now, they're not going to go retrofit every old machine necessarily, but somebody may come up with a way to do that. Say, hey, if you just plug in your, you know, what are these things called? What are we calling the standard again?
Stick it up your tube?
Stick it up your tube, yes. So so they might have to come up with the stick it adapter, you know, so it actually plugs into your existing machine and the new tubes will fit into it. It may be fine. Yeah. So it's another business opportunity.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe the people who already sold your machine will come up with that and then they can say, hey, here's the upgrade so you can use the latest tubes and you don't have to buy necessarily a brand new machine today, but in 3 years, your new machine will have it.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. My goal is by 2035. I want to can I do this in 10 years? I think I can do it in 10 years. I think I can do it in less, but we'll see.
I think you can do it in less.
Let's hope so. All right. I got a couple of fun questions for you, John. I have been listening to podcasts since before they were called podcasts, literally. Like since.
Okay. What were they called before they were called podcasts?
So I heard
the term, people on audio.
So it was literally just like an internet show. It was like a lot of times.
Internet and then shows. Early on, yeah, that's right. You're right. I remember that.
Yeah. Or they would call it like a netcast. I heard netcast.
They also called it internet radio.
Yeah. Internet radio. Yeah.
For a while.
But some of the ones I've been listening to, cause I have diverse interests. I love brewing my own beer. I love Formula One motor racing. And I also love business shows. And one of my favorite business shows is from a guy named Simon Sinek. A lot of people know Simon.
Starts with Why, I think was his first breakout novel breakout business book.
Right. And he has a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. And he asks a couple questions and he psychoanalyzes his guests as he asks the questions. But I'm not as smart as him. I'm not going to psychoanalyze you. But one of his questions.
So Chris, hold on. I have to interrupt you here. I've got to interrupt you. So when I was a college student, I tried to avoid dating women who were majoring in child psychology because I figured they'd figure me out too fast. So are we going down that path?
Nope, not at all. Because I'm not smart enough to do the psychoanalyst stuff. I just love the question. I think the question is fascinating. He asks his guests, what have you worked on in your career that you love so much that if every day of your working life was like this day, you'd be the happiest person alive? Can you think of an example, a specific experience, something that we can almost relive with you, this project you worked on that you loved so much and you just thought, oh my gosh, I wish I could just keep doing this forever and I'd be the happiest person alive.
Sure. I'm in the middle of it.
Ah, come on, John.
No, I didn't mean the podcast. I didn't mean the podcast.
What?
Sorry. That would be pandering. No, what I'm saying is we're working on solving the workforce problem.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, it's a multidimensional. So I plan on working it literally for the rest of my life. So COVID seemed to hit the entire world at once and suddenly everybody had a workforce challenge, right? Mm-hmm. But the electronics industry has had one for decades because we constantly change.
Yes.
We're never satisfied. There is no status quo. It's like if you sit in status quo in the electronics business, you're out of business.
That's right.
You know, you need to constantly be getting new skills. Technology is always changing. That's what's fantastic about it. I joke with people, I sit there and I go, oh, it's 2024. I'm not sure this electronics trend is, maybe it's going to be like the pet rock and this is the last year for it. We're done with electronics. You know, that's not going to happen. I mean, it touches every industry, every place. And so we're working on, there's so many different aspects of it. Like our view at IPC of the electronics problem is there's the acquisition and then the retention of an individual. And an acquisition, we're trying to build a pipeline. So that's what the foundation's about and getting out to kids who maybe don't want to go to college or are in college. There's all different kinds of roles in the electronics industry. Mm-hmm. And then we're also working with companies to help them onboard. So you can take somebody literally from a fast food restaurant in a day, have them working as an operator on your line with the skills through, you know, the EDGE programs. And then you move into people who are already there and it's like giving them pathways, trying to develop consistent pathways for the industry. You know, if you go and say, hey, I want to hire a QA manager and you say, oh, well, you're a QA manager. And then you come into a different shop. Well, or maybe they aren't. They're kind of, it could be very different. So we're trying to create with industry these pathways so that you get credentials and people know, oh, I'm an IPC QA manager, an IPC test engineer, an IPC manufacturing engineer, so that they go, oh, I know what skills they have. So that, you know, just like when somebody has an MBA or a CPA, you kind of know what you're getting as a base set. And then on the high end of that or the other end of that is upskilling. So, you know, in that retention piece, you want to keep up those skills. If people don't know how to do analytics on big data, you're in trouble today and you may not have learned it while they were in college. So we need to provide opportunities to learn analytics, how to use AI, how to do XYZ. So that's just the scope of what IPC is trying to do. And so working, in addition, I get the opportunity to work with governments. You know, mm-hmm. I was recently at the White House on a workforce coalition on with regards to the CHIPS Act. Yep. And trying to talk about how can we build a workforce that will be sustainable. We're doing the same thing in Europe. I talk about workforce in Japan, in China, you know, wherever it goes, Taiwan. So that's the thing. Cool. It's the reason I cite that one is because it's not just one little thing.
Sure.
You know, it's so general and broad that there's always something of interest. So even if you get a little burnout on one aspect of it, oh, I got 17 other aspects I can look at, you know, right. and work on those as well. So
you're living the dream, John. You're living the dream.
One word is workforce.
You're living the dream. That's so cool. I'll tell you what then, hiring and training is one of our biggest challenges. I'm glad you're on the job and I'm glad we have resources from yourself and IPC and your team to help us. We're going to try to take full advantage of it.
The electronics industry isn't designed to be an education institution.
Correct.
And so IPC said, we've said, this is our role. We will do this for you. We'll take the best knowledge across the world and put it in just like you experienced on, you know, the using multimodal
awesome.
You know, all the learning science to make sure that people can retain it and make it accessible to you wherever you're at.
Yeah. And I could tell going through that program, I could tell like, oh, I could give this to a new person and they would be able to handle it. It's not just because I've been in the industry for, you know, a couple of decades that I can handle it. I could go on. It was really well done. Thank you for that answer.
No, go on.
Yeah. All right. So my next question for you. So yeah. I big fan of Formula One motor racing. A lot of listeners know this already. You're obviously, you have a passion and for education, and you're quite good in your role of building a team that can, you know, provide education to businesses like ourselves. You have a particular talent and you're well known for that talent, but what would surprise listeners? What other talent do you have that might surprise listeners that they wouldn't be aware of that Dr. John W. Mitchell has? This is a question that they ask all the Formula
One drivers
because everybody just assumes the only thing they do is drive a car. And then they're like, right, actually, exactly. I'm really good at playing the piano.
So I do triathlons. I've competed in the Ironman World Championships in my age group the last few years.
Where do you find the time to do that?
You just get up really early, man.
I guess. My goodness. And go to bed really early. Yeah.
Try to. That's the worst part. Anyway, advice to the young kids out there, don't get older.
Oh, okay. That's a good, I'll try that. I should take up skydiving then.
Most people don't know that I do the triathlons. Although there was one year at Apex, they had like playing cards of people in the industry. And so one of them had a picture of me doing a triathlon on it.
An Ironman. You say you competed in the Ironman. If I understand that correctly.
Yeah. So I do the 70.3s mostly, but I did the full, which is 140.6. And I had intended to only do one. Mm-hmm. And as it turns out, I qualified for world championships in it. And I was like, well, I never am going to do it again. Oh, so I better go do world championships because I never plan on qualifying again. So I did that.
That's amazing.
It was.
That must have been such an experience. That's like a 2.5 mile swim, like a 100-something mile bike ride and a marathon.
112 and then a marathon. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the water went for the worlds. Even the pros were complaining about it. It was 57 degrees. God.
That's like borderline life-threatening, John.
I think by the race, it got up to 59. But, and there's only certain amounts of stuff that they'll allow you to wear either, you know. So right. You're in a wetsuit. They did allow booties, so I bought some online that they shipped to me, Amazon. Thank you, Amazon. You kept
Where
my feet
was this
alive.
Competition?
You know?
Where did they host it?
It was actually, that one, it was in St. George, Utah. It got postponed to 2022.
What was the body of water you were in?
It was a reservoir, Lake Reservoir. But gotcha. Apparently it even gets cold in the desert.
Yeah, yeah. Who'd have thunk? Yeah, turns out. When we were at Apex, because Apex used to be in Vegas, I think it was in like January. And at night it was cold, man.
Yeah.
Cold. And you think of Vegas as being pretty warm. Not in January, it's not. Okay, final fun question for you. Besides me and Melissa, who is the coolest person in your phone book?
Steve Young?
The 49ers quarterback?
Yeah.
No, sir. That's fantastic.
I once reached out to him for and I ended up with his cell phone number. I have some congressmen cell phone numbers as well from being in business. They're like, I was like, well, how do I set up an appointment? They're like, here, just take my cell phone number. I'm like, oh, really? Oh,
they're not as cool as Steve Young. I mean, they're important.
They're not as cool as Steve Young. So Steve Young's cool.
The question is who's cool in your phone.
That's right. Yeah. I've got some very powerful people in the phone.
Sure.
But he's the coolest.
Yeah. That's awesome. I was...
I should have said my daughter, though.
I see.
Because she's creative. She does. You should see pictures that she like does.
Be careful with this.
Halloween does like the makeup and stuff, and you never even recognize her. I had her walk into my bedroom one time with a wig on. I didn't know who it was.
That's awesome. I have to admit, I was such a fan of Joe Montana that when Steve Young took over at first, I was like, I don't know about this guy. I'm not a big fan. Because I was like Joe Montana all the way. And then turns out Steve was pretty good.
Yeah, just he was all right. He's all right. Okay. Yeah.
He's all right.
Yeah, so I became a non-Joe Montana fan because Steve Young was on the sidelines waiting for him to get injured or, right, or retire. And I was a Steve. So he went to BYU. It was funny. When I was a student there at BYU, I was going to go ask this girl out. And this is a terrible story, but I'm going to tell it anyway. So what the heck? You wanted to know personal? And they're like, oh, no, you, John, you don't have a chance. I said, what do you mean? So Steve Young flies her out to every game.
Oh, my gosh.
He's like dating her. I'm like, oh yeah, it's a little hard to compete with.
That's a difficult one to compete with. Oh, that's too fun. Did you tell Steve that when you met him?
No.
No. Okay. Well,
because he didn't end up, it was probably only for a matter of months, you know, and he probably wouldn't even, I don't even remember what her name was. So, you know,
I'm sure she's living a wonderful life to this day.
I'm sure they all are. It's great. Yeah.
All right. All right, now my favorite part of the show. This is where we get into the pet peeve.
The pet peeve.
I'm ready for it. Melissa, are you ready for it?
I'm always ready for it.
All right, we're ready. Lay it on us, John. What's your pet peeve?
All right, I've got two.
If you had three, I'll take them all. Go for it.
All right. So this is – I hate it when people leave drawers and cabinets open.
Oh.
Mm.
It drives me nuts. I'm like, shut the door. Come on, people. How hard is it? You take something out, just close it. It's right there.
Well, you know what? You know,
So I don't necessarily turn on the lights to walk around the house.
Mm-hmm.
My wife hates this, by the way. And she's like, well, you run into stuff. What's your own problem? Turn on a light, you know?
Yeah.
But when there's a drawer open and you're doing that, you smack into it with your hip. And so this is probably where that stems from.
Yeah. Yeah. The worst one is when you leave the
fridge open. I'm also 6'3", so, you know, I'll turn around and smack my head in a cabinet that somebody's left open. So I think it's probably a self-preservation thing.
That's probably what it is. It's probably what it is. Yeah, yeah. The worst one is leaving the fridge door open, though, because then everything gets warm and, you know, the electric bill. All right. That's a good one. That is a good one. Yeah.
You haven't heard that one before, huh?
Now I'm a little self-conscious. I'm thinking,
yeah, I'm definitely guilty of that.
Am I that person? I'm looking behind you guys to see if you have drawers open in your...
No, is my door? Oh, my drawers closet door cabinets, is cracked open.
It's doors are open. Fine. It's just the drawers and cabinets, you know. So,
yeah. I probably have some lower ones open.
Yeah, well, you're my uncle and daughter opens them all. You're gonna pass, Melissa.
And you can just blame it on the kids, right? It's the kids that left it open.
Yeah, they pulled it open. Yeah. Did you have to go around and get all the child like proof things so they don't open the doors?
We
and
do
stuff?
On some of them, but some of them we've just left them because then she can just open them up and explore and then.
Oh, yeah. Well, you leave the safe stuff in there, like the knives and scissors, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, Melissa, how many children?
Just one. Yeah.
It's my me, just five. So, yeah, same thing. The reason I ask is because my oldest son, when he was born, he was a bit of a terror. Mm-hmm. And then my daughter was born, and until she was almost 2 years old, she would just sit there dainty and be the sweetest thing, just smile and, you know, coo or whatever, never got into anything. And I figure about the time she turned 2 years old, my son came over to her and was like, look, you don't have to do this anymore. You can get into cabinets. You can throw stuff all over the place. Let me show you how this is done.
Yeah. you see this fragile thing?
Yeah.
Throw it across the room.
Exactly. This place can be chaos. And then literally like a year later, this is going to sound like bad parenting, but anyway, she found a steak knife, went over to the leather couch and went full psycho on every cushion on the couch and shredded them all like it was just a game. And we're like going, oh my goodness, there goes that couch.
That's terrible. I had a buddy in high school who, for fun, he would take, like, he carried around a pocket knife, and for fun, he would jam it into car tires because he liked the rush of air coming out when he did it.
Oh.
I'm like, are you kidding me? Right in the sidewall. So you can't patch it or anything.
Can't patch it. Yeah. You got to get a new tire.
Boy, I wonder what that kid's up to nowadays. Hopefully he's not a vandal.
He works at Tires R Us down the road.
No, he's selling. He's the salesman. He's the salesman selling the tires. Yeah.
He works. We've got a booming business going here. All kinds of knife wounds.
Yeah. Oh, that's awful. All right. Well, you had two, right? What was your second pet peeve?
Oh, you know, it's subtle sounds.
Subtle sounds.
Subtle sounds that people make and aren't aware. And I think this is because I'm afraid I do.
Ooh.
Oh. What, so like the, like it could be just.
Oh.
And just doing it once is not a problem, but doing it every 3 seconds is what gets, will set me off. I'm like, or they'll go. Just something like that. I don't care. Do it once, do it twice, whatever. But if it's just consistent, like every 12 seconds, it's going off. I'm like going, what? You can't focus on anything else because I'm ADD, you know. It's like, all I'm seeing is this.
I got a friend of mine. I want to say he's in his late 70s or early 80s, something like that. And he sucks air between his teeth.
Yep.
And you'll be like quiet trying to listen to something and just.
My dad used to be a heavy breather. He would sit there and go. And I'm like, dude, just breathe quietly.
My niece and nephew pick on their mother, my sister and I, because apparently we chew very loud. I don't know. I think we got hollow heads.
So I have a cavernous mouth as well. So when I crunch, so this is the reason I bring it up. I think it's my, again, self-conscious because I'm if I'm chewing on something, it's like, I was like, sorry, I'm eating over here and everyone in the room can hear me.
Taylor Swift would say, I'm the problem. It's me. I'm the one making all the noises people can't
stand. That's a great, maybe you should send her that lyric.
I just might do that. I'm feeling so empowered today. I think she could use it.
Have you seen the analysis where they do the Taylor Swift thing versus Friends episodes?
No, but it sounds great.
So she's a huge fan of Friends.
Who isn't?
And there's like, Taylor Swift is, right? And so she apparently, they like grab all these snippets and they show how all of these lines are worked into her songs.
I'll have to look that up. It must be on YouTube or something.
Yeah, right? It's a YouTube thing. Yeah,
I'm sure I'll find it. Oh, that sounds great. Well, my wife and I are going to be in England in June and July. And apparently she's having some concerts over there. And now I'm feeling pressure to try to get tickets. And I don't know that I can afford an England trip and tickets to Taylor Swift.
So there's a secret to getting Taylor Swift tickets. Do you know this?
Having just tremendous amounts of money?
Well, no. You actually can do it just get the normal price, like $60 a ticket.
What? How?
You have to be a fan.
Okay.
And have been following her. So you find a fan to go buy you the tickets that can't go to England because they're a fan over here. Okay. And they can get online and they get priority to get those tickets. So my daughter-in-law... Actually, I'm like, how in the world did you guys get I look online, they're like $3,000 a ticket, and that's people reselling them.
Exactly. Yeah.
But if you go to a fan and have them actually order it at the right time, they'll get it for face value.
Well, I'm going to have to call my wife.
Little secrets. At least that's what I'm told by my daughter-in-law. So, and she's pretty smart. So,
no, I believe it. I believe it. This is a different show in a different podcast, but that's a weird economic situation that the whole like buying and reselling of, you know, video cards.
I think it should be illegal.
And tickets.
I think you should not be able to resell tickets at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah.
There was a time before back in the day when you had Michael Jackson, when I was growing up, it's like, oh, I want to go see Michael Jackson. They were like going to sell these tickets for in the same, and you couldn't resell them. And so people would get around it and they'd sell you a pack of cigarettes for $300 and give you two Michael Jackson's tickets for free.
I'll pass on both. Thank you very much.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's always a way around it. I don't know that you can regulate it, but it would just be interesting if you had to, you know, do a DNA test in order to go into the show that you actually purchased it.
Right, right. Yeah, we got to, you know what? We work in an industry that can probably do that human biotics testing.
Oh, we could do that. No
make
problem.
All that possible.
But then we'd hear everybody complaining about privacy issues, so then we'd be shut down.
Yeah, we'll call your Congress friend. He'll probably... There you go. Step one, step two. All right, John. Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. Is there anything we didn't touch on you wanted to talk about? Any, you know, I mean, we've been going on here. We've been very generous.
You know, there's so much going on with the industry and IPC. You know, we're working on the CHIPS Act. We mentioned workforce. We're leading the industry to try to adapt to all the new sustainability changes that are happening. So we could do hours on any one of those topics, but we hope everybody will get involved. And if any of those touch on anyone who's listening, please reach out to IPC, because we're here for the industry to try to help solve these challenging issues that are confronting us all the time by working with industry.
What's the best way for people to get in touch with your team or IPC? Is it just,
Go to IPC.org and there's a connection piece there, or, you know, my personal cell phone number is
555. No, of course not.
Actually, but I put my email out. My email address is out there for the world. So just, you know, if email me and I'll put you in touch with the right person.
Great, great. Start at IPC.org. See what you can get answered there before bugging poor John. You get inundated with.
I had a couple things to do.
Ourselves, you can always reach out to us. Email us at contact@pickplacepodcast.com. You can tweet at us on X or whatever. I don't know what the verbiage is anymore. And I try to tell this ridiculous joke every single episode, and it always falls flat. But we are at Circuit Hub.
So instead of tweeting on Twitter, you get canceled on X.
Okay. Cancel us at Circuit Hub.
Please don't cancel us.
Or at WSM.
It was just that failed too. I did that kind of off the top of my head. I'm not sure that's
working. I think it works. I'm going to keep rolling with that. As always, we recommend, if you enjoyed the show, please tell a friend, coworker, anybody you think might be interested to hear about these topics and discuss this industry, and maybe they want to reach out and get involved with IPC.
Thanks so much, John, and to everyone else, thanks for listening to the Pick Place podcast. If you like what you heard, consider following us in your favorite podcast app, or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts from.
Thanks very much, Melissa and John. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, guys.